It's a cold January morning in 1933. You and millions of other people turn on your television to Movie 2 News. You catch the program just in time to see a Chinese woman outfitted with an elaborate headdress and a well-decorated floor-length robe. After addressing her audience in Chinese, she welcomes you in English as well. It's Princess Derling. As she speaks about peace in the Republic of China, the camera pans down to reveal the most interesting part of her outfit, horse hoof shoes. Immediately, your eye is drawn to the large hourglass-shaped heel. It almost diverts your attention from her small feet atop the wooden heel. Balancing on the center of her bound feet, they make her stand several inches taller. To her fellow Manchu people, she is the height of fashion and immediately recognized as a member of the politically elite class. Welcome to the Mulvane Art Museum, Art of Asia podcast. This is Shelby,
Lily,
and Anna.
And today we'll be discussing the Manchu horsehoof shoes in the Mulvane Gallery collection.
The shoes come from the Qing Dynasty. This was the last dynasty that China had and ruled from 1636 to 1912. This rule was a unique one. Foreigners from the north, called the Manchu, came from China and became the ruling class. This had not been the first time the foreigners had entered China since the Mongols had created their own dynasty, called the Yun Dynasty, from 1279 to 1368. Due to a foreign group ruling the country, the Manchu wanted to be strategic in how the government was run. The Han people vastly outnumbered the Manchu people. As such, the Qing Dynasty had gives and takes between the two groups. One big example of that was fashion. The shoes were worn by someone who lived in the Forbidden City. The Forbidden City is located in the city of Beijing. It was built during the Ming Dynasty, and the palace name stems from few people having access into the city itself. It has walls around the palace, and many government, as well as members of the royal family, had restricted access into parts of the palace. The city consists of administrative halls, living quarters, a garden, and temple. The style of the complex reflects a concept called feng shui, meaning living in harmony with nature. This was reflected in the doors facing south to let in more light, and a river to the south, and a mountain to the north. Other types of shoes worn during that time were boots. In the case of male officials, square-toed boots were worn, while male civilians would wear pointed toe shoes. Older women would wear shoes similar to the ones we were talking about today, but the tread would consist of a flat piece of wood, which would then be decorated with loop beads.
Within the Mulvane collection sits a pair of these small Manchu horsehoof shoes. They are decorated with colors of blue, green, and white. They show beautiful examples of Chinese flora and fauna designs, rich with symbolism and history. The shoes themselves would be interchangeable on the feet, coming to a soft point at the center of each foot. The soles are filled with a soft material like cotton, showing that they would be only worn indoors or for very special occasions by the wealthy. The shoe itself takes on the appearance of a fish, with large eyes on both sides of each shoe and a thread embroidered to suggest scales under the eyes. Fish symbolize abundance and affluence. This can be abundance in wealth or abundance in children. It is common to see fish in pairs, a perfect design for a set of shoes, to represent a happy marriage or lots of children. At the top of the shoe, between the eyes of the fish, is what looks to be a butterfly. The butterfly symbolizes longevity and was often added to designs as a way to repeat the blessings of the other images. At the toe of the shoe sits a white peony, a symbol of femininity, wit, and beauty. Along the side of the shoe is a bundle of jasmine, entangled in beautifully embroidered leaves, a common motif in Qing Dynasty women's clothing. The making of the shoes themselves also presents us with a very interesting cultural and societal trend in the Qing Dynasty. The soft cloth toppers were typically made by women and sent to cobblers who completed the shoe with the iconic wooden horsehoof base. This kind of relationship reflects the Confucian hierarchical roles in society and the duty each member had in serving it. Men and women's work was separate, but essential to one another. The shoe wouldn't have been complete without the cloth top or the wooden base. It was necessary for both roles to be fulfilled in order to complete the task. Confucian morals and principles were seen throughout the Qing Dynasty, from how an older brother treated his younger sister to how a boss treated his employee. A strict moral code ruled behavior and work. These dainty shoes show this complex relational history in China.
So when we were researching what to choose for our topic and looking at the options in front of us, I think we were all really drawn to the horsehoof shoes, one because of their unique shape, but also fashion history in general really is underrepresented, especially like traditional fashion history. And I think researching something that was personally owned and worn by someone is really interesting. It presents a lot of unique challenges, but also interesting results.
Definitely. The results from researching this project, we saw a lot about the qipao. And in Chinese history, the qipao and these shoes, they were worn together, but the shoes kind of got lost in history. There's a lot of information about the qipao and the symbolism and women representation with that, but not a lot with the shoes.
I think going off of what you guys are saying too, if you go to a museum, a lot of it's just paintings or sculptures, and it's not just the fashion of the day just because it's not considered to be as a work of art as the other two.
Right.
I think also too, we knew a lot of information on foot binding just because of the Western view of it and how it's very
strange.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think a very negative view, and I think some fashion trends that we have, I guess corsets as well, would probably be very similar. But I know the shoes itself are very reminiscent of high heel shoes, which is very interesting to see how different cultures take different shoes and can make them their own, I guess.
And high heels existed everywhere throughout time.
Yeah, it just looks different compared, depending where you were at too.
We all want to be taller.
Exactly. Yeah. I think too, also what was interesting, I suppose, was the colors. I know in the description, the Mulvane, the blue was used for the upper crest. We were able to identify where the shoe most probably was worn just because of the colors it was used for.
Yeah, the colors and symbolism we found through our research in China and Chinese history is so important, even through architecture and really all forms of art. It was interesting to see that in shoes themselves, how they could show, with the fish, how that represented a happy marriage. Everything in China has a lot of meaning, a lot of history, how we talk about Forbidden City and just how that is set up. It's all really important, which is, I think, different than a lot of Western art and even architecture and our footwear, I think, has never really had a whole ton of meaning like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talking about the symbolism, we talked about earlier, the shoes have a butterfly on them, and that could just be so ambiguous. I know we talked about how the butterfly usually symbolizes longevity, but it also could mean just an emphasis on whatever is surrounding it. Something else we didn't really mention is the coin on the bottom of this shoe. Mm-hmm. And that compared with the butterfly could just mean lots of wealth. It just really emphasizes whatever's around it.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of feminist female symbols on it as well.
Right.
Just from the color of it, it is an opposite red, I suppose, being a very bright, vibrant color. The flowers and the animals that are symbolized on it.
Yeah, you're talking about, there's a lot of feminine essence within these shoes. And I'm just wondering, do you think we can make the argument that these shoes kind of represent female empowerment?
I think it might look different than what female empowerment in the West typically looks like. Mm-hmm. But wearing something that represents beauty and wit and softness and growth and all of these really beautiful things, I think as a woman wearing these things, it could be empowering to have that sort of look to you, that sort of representation and symbolism. I think that could be, in a way, empowering.
Mm-hmm. You feel super powerful because you're wearing these shoes that you're wow, these hold a lot more meaning, especially for Westerners looking at it. You're that's just a butterfly, but yeah. From China, it has this history of its symbolism. I can
so much more to it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Tying this conversation back to the video of Derling, I think it's really interesting to consider how the clothes that she was wearing and the shoes that she was wearing would have been rich with symbolism and meaning in the Chinese audience watching her talking about bringing the old dynasty of China into the Republic. It all would have meant something more to them than it would to have a westernized audience.
Mm-hmm. It's very, I guess, interesting, researching her, a little bit more. She was definitely part of, two worlds. She grew up in the Western culture. She grew up in France.
Right.
And how that, translates to her time in the Forbidden City and, working with the Empress, Dowager during that time. I know, Shelby did a lot of research on the video, and she, made, the comment that during the video, when she's speaking, Mandarin?
Mandarin.
Thank you.
I was going to say Mandarin oranges. But
Mandarin oranges. Yeah, Mandarin. There's commentaries talking about how you can
tell that there is an accent there just mm-hmm. because that wasn't her first language. I mean, like, she also spoke English, French as well, and how that also translates.
Yeah, and I think something that we all kind of know about China is that they have a lot of emphasis on nationalism there. Mm-hmm. And so Derling, she was under a lot of scrutiny for even her voice. A lot of the comments on her video said that they could just tell that her accent was not originally from China, and she was just under a lot of criticism.
Well, I know, like, she also married, like, somebody from, like, the U.S., and so yeah. then she was pretty much just kicked out of China, and she, like, moved to the U.S., and, like, wrote about her experience, was, I'm sure, was also probably being, well, this isn't, like, an accurate representation, but, like, nobody else has been in, like, the Forbidden City and, like, worked as close to the Empress and couldn't, like, back up some of her claims. An outsider point of view, but, like, how accurate was the outsider point of view, or outside-ish point of view, I suppose?
Right. It's interesting to think that a very good example of how we understand China to be through Derling, through a lot of the emphasis and the work that she's done, is someone who really wasn't fully a part of the culture and who ultimately was rejected by her own culture, mm-hmm. but she still sits in iconic elements of Chinese culture. So it's just, she's a really interesting figure, and I'm glad we were able to put her at the center of our research with these horsehoof shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The horsehoof shoe was a small part of the Manchu woman's dress, but it represents a large part of history, culture, and tradition. It holds within its beautifully designed silk cloth a group of people's beliefs and societal standards. These shoes in our own Mulvane collection exist as an example of Imperial China. And after talking about the historical, religious, and social context of the Manchu horsehoof shoes, it makes it easier for us to appreciate the impact that Princess Derling from the News Channel had by simply wearing this type of shoe on television and exposing people to the culture of the last Chinese dynasty and the last generation to inhabit the Forbidden City. These shoes, kept on campus in the Mulvane Art Museum, allow us to also reflect on it.
Thanks for joining us today on our podcast. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.